Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's podcast is going to be a long one. I wanted to try to get all this information into one podcast because it all goes along together. And I think if I draw it out amongst too many podcass, I wanted to kind of make like a blitz through it, and then that way you guys could use this single podcast as your reference, and then you can kind of mark in different times, so about which areas we talk about. So what we're going to be discussing is improving weaknesses in the squat, bench, and deadlift. So this was a topic requested by a listener, and what they really wanted to know was specific to exercise variations that would help them improve their weaknesses. Now, there are generally three ways for us to get stronger at a movement, and we did podcast number 102, titled Three Ways to Progress in Strength, and what they are is physical strength development, technical strength development, and mental strength development. So too often when people think about getting stronger, they only think of physical strength. They don't pay attention to the need to improve their technique, and they don't think about the mental aspects of, okay, why am I missing big weights? You know, am I psyching myself up too much? Am I psyching myself up not enough? Am I overstressing and getting overcomplicated and focusing too much on cues, and that's ruining my speed? So there's a lot of mental aspects that can impair our performance when we look at top-end strength. And technique strength is 100% the first place and the most important place for everyone to look. When you need to get stronger in a movement, you must look at technique. So the person asked in this podcast for physical development information, so specifically exercise variations. However, that is not the place to look. Okay? So I'm about to give you a really lot of information, and it isn't even the best information. So the best way to get stronger is to be more efficient in displaying your strength. So you want to get technique strength first. That's the first place to look at. That's the most important place to look at. That is where you look. Because if you can express your current strength better, you'll better be able to express your strength for the rest of your life. Also, if you can express your strength in the safest positions, you'll be less risk of injury. So too often people just try to get physically stronger over top of this shitty technique base, and they eventually get injured, they eventually hit plateaus, and they wonder why they can't move forward anymore. And the reason why is you can only physically develop crap technique to some limit. You have to eventually get better technique. So everything I'm about to say in this podcast is meaningless if you do not pursue better technique. Now, better technique is extremely hard to explain verbally through any kind of a podcast. So you have to have somebody physically look at the way you move. Everyone moves differently because everyone is different. We all have different bone lengths. We all have different muscle balances. So the ways our body prefers to move. So I would absolutely 100% suggest, if you are serious about trying to get better at strength, is to go get someone to look at your lifts. So go get a trainer or somebody who is experienced working with multiple populations and multiple types of body builds. So do not go get the strongest guy in your gym. So just because they can squat, bench, or deadlift more than everybody else does not mean they know how to get you to squat, bench, or deadlift more than everybody else. So overwhelmingly, that's the biggest mistake people make when they look for technique development information, is they go to somebody who is strong, assuming they know how to make you strong. That's absolutely not true. So overwhelmingly, I've seen over the years, where just because somebody is strong doesn't mean they're going to be a good teacher. So what tends to happen is if they squat a certain way, they're going to tell everybody to squat the way that they squat. If they deadlift a certain way, they're going to tell everybody to deadlift the way that they deadlift. And that is not correct for everyone. So that is a super, super, super important, is do not get the strongest guy in your gym to get you to help. Okay, get the most educated, the most experienced working with multiple populations. So that means you got to do a little bit of homework. You got to go see, you know, what trainers are in your local area. You know, who have they trained with? What have they worked with? So you want to have somebody who has a wide variety of populations that they've worked with. They're going to be able to help you more than just some brute strong male or female who knew what worked for them, but they don't know what's going to work for you. So I can't overemphasize this enough. Is technique is the first place to look. And when you're going to get technique information, do not ask the strongest person you know. Ask the most intelligent in the conceptual knowledge that you're going to need. Ask the person who has the most well-versed background in a variety of body types and positions. So, for example, this is not an advocate commercial for myself, but it is a good example, is I squat, bench, and deadlift a certain way for me, and it has changed over the years. So I'm weighing now about 155, 160 pounds. I'm actually on a diet. So, but I've been as high as 295. And when I graduated high school, I only weighed 185 pounds. It was a pudgy 185. It wasn't even a muscular 185. So I've gained over 100 pounds in my body, and that has changed how I needed to position myself through all the years. And then also I've had various injuries, so I've had to learn how to squat different ways. So I've squatted low bar, high bar. I've squatted low bar and high bar in flats, or low bar and high bar in Olympic lifting shoes. I've benched where it was a chest dominant bench. I've benched where it's a tricep dominant bench. I've benched with a high arch, benched with a low arch. I've deadlifted sumo, conventional. So it's just in my lifetime, for my body, my body has changed. My life has changed. So I needed to know a lot of varieties just for my own self. Okay? So you're going to need somebody who understands those variances. So if they squat a certain way and they tell you that's the way that you should squat, you better damn well be built exactly like they are. Otherwise, it's not correct. Okay? If they tell you to bench a certain way, you better be damn well built the exact same way they are. Otherwise, it's not correct. And the same thing for deadlift. So if they do deadlift with, let's just say they lift their head up to the ceiling when they deadlift, that's overwhelmingly a horrible advice for somebody who does conventional deadlifts, is to have your chin up and extended, because it's going to pull everything out of place. You're going to end up starting your deadlift almost in a pulling motion rather than a pushing off the floor motion. So when you do a conventional deadlift, you need to drive with your feet up off the floor, not pull the bar up using your head as the first thing you're moving. That's the dumbest thing in the world. Your feet are connected to the ground. Start with your feet, not your head. Okay? So, all with that said is I can't stress enough how everything I'm about to say will be absolutely meaningless if you don't have good technique. So go get someone to help you with technique. Okay? That's where your first place you want to look. Now, okay, so now that I got through that, the person who asked for this information, they said in general that they believe in the theory that you are only as strong as your weakest link. So I can only squat, bench, or deadlift as much as the weakest area or spot of those lifts is. So if I'm weakest at the bottom of the lift, I can only lift in the middle and the top whatever I could lift at the bottom. And that's the same of other positions. So if I have weak chest, I can only bench as much as my chest will allow. Even if I have stronger triceps and shoulders, like front delts, it won't matter because I can only express my strength through the weakest area or the weakest muscle. So that is pretty much true. So what they wanted to know was they understood that isolation work is important. So if I want to get a bigger bench, I do have to work on my chest. I have to work on my front delts, I have to work on my biceps, my triceps, my upper back. There's a lot of muscles that I need to individually train. But their question is specific to exercise variations. So they want to know the variations of the bench press that'll help them with different positional weaknesses. So we're going to go through that. But I wanted to emphasize that if you need to get stronger at one of these lifts, you need to be looking at your isolative movements. So overwhelmingly, what I spend most of my time programming for clients is the isolative movements. So they'll come in, they'll do a warm-up, they'll do their main lift, and then they typically have anywhere from 3 up to 6, maybe even sometimes more, exercises after the main lift that are isolative movements like related to the weaknesses of their main lift. So if you think about, like, they might have anywhere from 5. So they might have anywhere from 5 to 10 components of their workout, and only one of those components is the main lift itself. Okay? So you can switch the variation of the main lift, and that might help. But that's only one out of 5 to 10 components of what your whole entire workout is incorporating. So overwhelmingly, people dismiss technique. And overwhelmingly, people dismiss the benefit of isolative movements, where you're trying to isolate a joint, or you're trying to isolate a muscle through specific range of motion. Those are absolutely going to be the most important ways for you to develop strength and keep you the safest from injury, because they allow you to attack your weaknesses with the lowest amount of joint stress. So the more you can improve through technique, the more you can improve it through isolative movements. And again, it's isolative to a hip, like to a joint or to a muscle. The more you can improve through those, you will get stronger and safer. You'll reduce injury and you'll be able to lift longer. So I've had clients who've progressed from meet to meet to meet over years. Like we've done, at one client we did 10 meets and they got better at every single meet. So for 10 meets in a row, they've hit PRs. So that's the goal. No injuries, knock on wood, you know, except for a couple little bumps and bruises and small things here and there, but nothing that we couldn't fix within about a month. And they've progressed 10 meets in a row. Okay? So that's what you want to do. You want to be in this for the long haul. Don't try to get super strong now, but rip your body to shreds. Okay, don't do that. So, the best ways to avoid doing that is to look at technique first, and then look at your isolative accessory style movements. So your accessory movements are insanely, insanely important. I would argue they're more important than the main lift for most people. So for most people, when they say they're kind of short on time, I tell them to get, unless they're a high level elite in their certain situations. But for most people, I'd rather they skip the squats and do all the accessories. They can catch the squats next workout and still be able to move forward. If all they do is hit their squats, but they don't hit any of the accessories, they're missing the things that really build up their weaknesses. Okay? So, technique, 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 and then pay attention to your small, isolative accessories. Now, with all of that said, I'm about to give you a podcast that's based on neither of those. But I want to answer the question that the person had. But I want them to understand where this answer ranks in levels of importance. Okay? So we've talked about diet, where calories is the most important. Your balance of macronutrients is the second most important, how much protein, carbs, and fats. Then you have meal timing, and then you have micronutrient quality or macronutrient quality. So what are the types of carbs I'm having? What are the types of fats I'm having? The types of proteins. The same thing applies to training when you're training for strength. Okay? So the type of squat you're doing is way the hell down the list. The most important is technique. The second most important is probably, I haven't really thought about ranking these out until right now I'm talking, but technique is absolutely most important. And then I would say the next most important thing is finding out what your weaknesses are and then attacking them with the lowest weight loaded movement, accessory style movement you can find, because that builds up the weakness as fast as possible. You can train it more frequently. You can get a higher amount of volume on it and you can protect joints. So that's the most important. And then third or fourth or whatever down the list is these exercise variations. So these are not as important as people think. Not anywhere near as important as what they think. Okay? Technique first, then your isolative movement style accessories is next most important. Now that I've gone through all that, let's go through and give you some guys and girls. Let's give you some exercises you can do to target different areas of your main movements. So when you do squat, what kind of squat is best for you? Now, this is going to be without me getting to see anything about the way you're lifting, so I can't improve your technique. Because, for example, if we're going to look at this and we're saying, okay, well, let's look at the lifts, squat, bench, deadlift, and am I weak at the bottom? Am I weak in the middle of the range? Or am I weak at the lockout or the top of the range? All of those are dependent on your technique. If you have improper technique, it'll show up in one of those places, and you'll think you have physical weakness when you're actually positionally incorrect. Okay? So let's go through this. This is going to be a long one, but again, let's invest into it. So if you really do give a shit about this, you're going to be willing to listen to this whole podcast. If you don't, and you're already kind of tuning out, well then, good luck to you. So if you can't handle, you know, a little bit of time invested into getting better, then you're screwed. So let's look at the squat. Now, if you're weak at the bottom of the squat, okay, and if you want to mark your timer, this is going to be what, like around 14 minutes? So that's when the squat starts. So we'll start here at 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Go. Okay. So squats. if you're weak at the bottom, you have to make sure that your positioning is correct and your muscle awareness and muscle cues are correct. So you might not be bracing your hips properly. So maybe you're one of those bottom-out squatters. So rather than stopping a parallel, you just kind of drop into your hamstrings and glutes and lower back and everything. So if you're an Olympic lifter or a CrossFitter coming into the strength world, you will have to get rid of that drop-down squat. Okay? Now, there are people who can do it, but that's very few. Okay, most best strength athletes are going to have hip positional control at parallel. So they will not bottom out and drop inches below parallel to be able to come back up and do amazing things. It does happen, okay, that's absolutely true, it does happen, but it's not likely that it will be the best for most people. Now, you can try it, see what you do, and then also try what I'm about to tell you now and see if that's any better. So, not bracing your hips properly. So that can be achieved by trying to split the floor with your feet. Like you're almost like you're trying to rip the floor in half, you know, left to right. And then also breathing properly and proper bracing of your abdomen. So again, this all falls under technique. This is stuff that you'd have to address in your technique. But if you don't have your hips braced and you don't have your breathing braced properly, you're going to suck at the bottom of a squat, and it'll have nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with physical development. It'll have everything to do with technique, okay? Now, what if you have good technique? That's a huge ass assumption, by the way. So let's. What if you do have good technique? Pause squats are very good. So you just go down to parallel, pause for the various counts I've done various times, and then come back up can help. So we've also done slow eccentrics into pauses. So they might do a 3-count down, 3-count pause, and then just explode up as fast as you can. By doing the slowed eccentric on the way down, it allows you to pay attention to your positional controls. So maybe if you go slow enough down, if you feel yourself drifting into your toes, you can prevent that. If you feel yourself losing hip tightness, you can prevent that. If you feel yourself losing abdominal bracing, you can prevent that. So doing slowed eccentrics gives you more body awareness. So that way, by the time you reach parallel, you reach the bottom of the squat, you're still in a good, safe, strong position. Okay? So super duper helpful to do slow eccentrics. You can do various speeds. So I've had people do like a 5-count eccentric into a 3-count pause. The very next rep, they'll do a 4-count eccentric into a 2-count pause. The next one, they'll do a 3-count eccentric into a 1-count pause, and then a 2 and none. So they kind of like speed up the eccentric and the pause each rep. Sometimes we'll do that each workout. So maybe one workout, they do a 5 and 3. Next workout, they do 4 and 2. Next workout, 3 and 1. Next workout, normal competition style squats. So you can vary it and progress it in different ways. But you want to make sure your progressions are set up to allow for increased weight load over the course of your program. So you might do a 3-week program, 4-week program, but you want to have progressive overload with weight, not volume, but progressive overload with weight. So that way you'll actually get stronger from this. So if you progress through volume, you will not get stronger. You'll get bigger muscles, but you won't get stronger. So you have to make sure that you're progressing in the right manner. So you might be doing the right type of variation of movement, but you're not going to progress the way that you want because you don't have your progressions set up, okay, correctly. So we did a podcast number 70. Called, it's a training podcast, Importance of Progression. So podcast number 70. That one will explain what is the right way to progress for strength. Okay? So you can be doing pause squats, which is the right thing to do, but if you're progressing in volume, you're messing up. You're going to get better at bodybuilding, you're not going to get better at strength. Okay? Now, maybe you need more muscle, and that will help, but you have to know what you're actually aiming for. Okay? This is why you have people write your program sometimes, because all this stuff is ridiculously important, and there's a lot of it to go on. Now, you can also do box squats, and they're great for building explosiveness out of the bottom. So again, you can do a controlled eccentric. You can pause on the box and then try to drive up off that. That'll teach you how to explode out of the bottom. Okay. You can also do tempo squats, which is kind of variations of eccentrics and pauses. So you might do 5-count down, 5-count up, 4-count down, 4-count up, 3-count down, 3-count up, 2-count down, 2-count up. And that, again, will give you awareness of positions and also giving you kind of time, more time under tension to help you develop the strength in that. You can also do dead squats from parallel. So that would be where you have the hard supports of a squat rack set up to where you're at parallel, Okay? And then from there, you're going to try to drive up out of the bottom of the squat. So there's no eccentric. You just line up underneath the bar, get yourself in good position, and try to drive up. So overwhelmingly, I can't stand dead stop squats. They're not applicable, in my opinion. There's going to be a ton of people who disagree with me. And there's going to be a ton of people who say that they got results from them. And that can be true. They can also be that they're not controlling it, all the variables. So maybe they just got better because they took a program that gave more attention to squatting, and all of a sudden they got better. Okay? So the reason why I don't like dead squats is you're getting under the bar in a really crappy, horrible position. You're trying to find tightness. You're trying to find all this position. And then you drive up out of there. That isn't how you get to parallel. So I would rather practice getting to parallel correctly and then creating force development rather than having to find a manufactured artificial way to get to parallel, kind of fake the position and try to move up from there. It's the same reason why I'm not a big fan of rack pulls for deadlifts or board presses for bench pressing, because they don't mimic the real way in which you get into those positions. Okay? So an elevated pull for a deadlift, it's a great way to minimize leg development, like minimize leg involvement if you want to overload your glutes and lower back, but it's not good for technique proficiency. So a rack pull will not help you with technique because you don't get to start a deadlift from the middle of it. You have to start a deadlift from the floor. So I prefer to do variations with my clients and in my own training that mimic as much of normal full range of motion as possible. And then we're just trying to change the positional requirements and or the speed requirements around where we want to get better. But they have to go through the full range of motion or all the normal stuff of a lift. So now I have trained people for elite totals, a bunch of them. I've trained people for national records, like obviously state records, a bunch of really good stuff. So I've trained really high level people. So what I'm about to tell you isn't like I'm, you know, full of crap and I don't really know the truth. So there are reasons why certain people like board presses. There are certain reasons why people like elevated deadlifts. But understanding what is the bang for your buck. So an elevated deadlift is good for overloading your, like, depending on where you elevate it to. But the height that you elevate it to, it's good for overloading, say, like upper back, lower back, and glutes, and maybe hamstrings, depending on where you elevate it to. But you're going to get physical overall development, but you're not getting any technique reinforcement. Why not do something that does both? Okay? So that doesn't make any sense. It's better for you to band a deadlift from the top of the rack to where the bottom is lighter, and then as you lift up through the full range of motion, it gets heavier towards the top. That's what you really want with a band, like a rack pull anyhow, is to overload the top of the motion. Well, why not get a full range of motion to work on all the technique aspects and get that overload? Rather than just doing a rack pull where you start from some bullshit position because you're anchoring yourself into it in a way that wouldn't mimic if you drove the bar off the floor, and now all of a sudden you get to look all cool and be the big man on campus, you know, and look like you're doing rack pulls with like 585 or 675 or something when you can't even get 405 off the damn floor. That's stupid. Absolutely stupid. So we want to make sure we pick variations that allow us to have the fullest range of motion, the most natural range of motion and techniques, but they just happen to emphasize the areas that you want to emphasize. Okay? So as we go through all this, I'm trying to make sure that I list the things that are available to you, but I also want to tell you what not to waste your time on. Okay? Now, you can decide to try the things that I say don't. Absolutely fine. That's how I learned that they were crap. So I learned them for myself. I learned them with programming for my first ever clients when I first ever did programming and stuff. I would tell them, like, hey, we're going to try this for a four-week block. I didn't really like it, but let's see what you think and let's see how your feelings are. Then all of a sudden, they wouldn't like it either. They wouldn't get much from it. After doing that for a couple people, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 people, all of a sudden you realize, okay, that's a pretty big waste of time. I'm going to stop ruining everybody's like 4 weeks, and I'm just going to assume that that exercise isn't that great. And that's actually the truth of it. So over the years of doing this, so I've been personal training for 17 years. So for 17 years and over 1,000 clients, I'm well aware of what most often works versus what most often doesn't. And there are so many things in the most often works category that you never even have to dip into the other stuff. So just keep yourself busy with the things that you know works. That'll keep you busy enough, okay? So If you have the weakness at the bottom of a squat, pause squats or slow eccentrics will help. Box squats are great and tempo squats. Not a big fan of dead squats. Okay? Now, weakness at the mid-range of a squat. So what happens if I get down to the bottom, I drive myself up a little bit, and then I'll kind of stall out in the middle. So that, again, is going to be often position. As you went down, you probably drifted forward into your toes. You tried to drive up off the ground and realized that you're all in your quads. You probably are rounded over in your upper back, and that's all going to be related to being having the bar drifting in forward above in front of your mid-range like center of gravity, so mid-foot center of gravity. You're going to be in front of that, and that's going to call on low back and quads. You're not going to be able to really use your hamstrings and glutes much. You're not going to have enough up lower back to support that, so it almost turns into the squat into a mini good morning, and you're just overloaded probably beyond what you can actually do a good morning with. So it's really important to pay attention to positioning and having proper back tightness. And did you bounce out of the hole? So maybe you dropped to the bottom, you bounced out of the hole, and it shot you forward. Well, then don't bounce out of the hole. You got to pay attention to your positioning. You got to brace the hips. So there's a lot of technique aspects that'll make it look like you're weak in the mid-range when you're not. You're just not in the right position when you get to the mid-range. Okay? Now, what happens if you worked a technique and your technique says you're right? Well, then partial or positional paused squats are great. So you would squat down halfway, pause. Go down to parallel, drive up halfway, pause, then back up. You can eventually get to where you get rid of the pause on the way up. So you just come down, pause midway, you go down, and then drive up through that mid spot. Okay? So positional pause squats are awesome. We also have partial range of motion squats. So if somebody's weak in the middle range of the squat, we'll have them squat down to about 2 or 3 inches below that spot. They'll push up to about 2 or 3 inches above that spot, and they just do repetitions just within that small little window. That is a killer way to squat, by the way, but it'll absolutely help your ability within that range by just coming in and out, in and out, in and out of that range and avoiding the hyper lockout and avoiding the hyper parallel, like the lower parts. Just hit the middle range of motion right around your weakness. Then you do have the option of dead squats where you set the bar at pins and you kind of squat from the bottom around wherever your weakness is. Again, not a big fan of that. Doesn't seem to work very well. So number one is position. Make sure your technique is appropriate. Therefore, you won't be weak in the middle position. And then from there, you can do those positional paused squats and also the partial range of motion squats. So just spending more time under tension in the area that you are worse at. Okay, so spend more time where you're weak. That's essentially what all these variations are trying to get to, is how do we expose your weakness even more? How do we make it be known and exaggerated that that's the problem with the lift? And then how do we spend more time under tension in that area? Okay? So those are going to help the most. Then weak at lockout, it's pretty rare. So most of the time, if somebody can get through the out of the bottom, they can get through the mid-range, they're going to pretty much lock out anything they need to. So maybe they just kind of missed time to quad flex versus their glute flex, so they kind of lost balance a little bit. But if you tend to have that as an issue, definitely pay attention to your technique. Pay attention to whether you're locking out your joints at the same time. So you might be mistiming your hip lockout versus your knee lockout. But you can also squat with bands and chains. So bands and chains allow you to do that overload on the top, and they'll kind of help you improve kind of like you're driving up power into that location. Okay? So that is all the information we're going to give on squats. Now, if you like this information and you want to learn more about it, shoot us an email, and I'll make an individual video just on squats. But I think that's a pretty comprehensive amount. So let's go with that to start with, and now we're going to move into bench. So for those of you listening to the podcast, you're going to have to give me a pause because I'm filming this for YouTube as well, and I want to kind of stop the video on YouTube and restart it again for kind of like a part two around bench press. So hello, YouTube. We're going to stop your video right now. Okay, we'll give that a couple seconds. Okay, and welcome back, YouTube. So now we're on to the bench section. So you, those of you in the podcast, you can kind of mark your timer that at around 29 minutes and 30 seconds, we're going to be getting into the bench press information. Okay? Now, so just like we said with squats, is technique is absolutely where you need to look at. So if you're having weakness in the bottom, the mid-range, or the lockout of your squat, your technique is probably misappropriate or something off in your technique in those locations, or before you even got to those locations, and then it was just exposed by that location. The same thing is true of bench. Okay, so this is bench press information. And we're going to look at the same thing as weakness at the bottom, weakness at mid-range, and weakness at lockout. Now, again, if you don't worry, if you don't focus on your technique, if you don't improve your technique, you might be experiencing weaknesses in these particular locations of the lift that are not related to physical strength. They're related to technical strength. So you have to improve your technique first, so that way you don't just keep slamming away at a physical strength problem when it isn't physical strength. That's the problem, okay? So let's say we have weakness at the bottom of the bench press. Now, positional problems that might have related to the weakness in that position is, as you lower the bar, you maybe didn't maintain a good squeeze in the middle of your back. You maybe didn't maintain a good leg drive and arch. Okay, so flexing through the thoracic spine and pressing through the legs to create a good stable braced arch and pressure up into that bar. So as the bar came down, you might have lost mid-back squeeze, you might have lost pressure in your legs, you might have lost pressure in your thoracic spine. So you lost positioning. So therefore, when you go to create power out of the bottom of the bench, there's nothing to create power through. You don't have any base, okay? So you want to make sure you pay attention to your position first. Now, if your position is correct, how do you build bench press at the bottom? Paused benching, so the same kind of concept we talked about with squats, was where you are weak, you want to spend more time at. Or you want to pick a variation of the movement that emphasizes that weakness area. Okay? So paused benching is something that emphasizes that location because you're stopping the bar there, and it's going to create more time under tension there. So you would want to bring the bar down. Now, there are positional pauses. You can pause, say, 2 inches above the chest. You can pause where the bar is just lightly touching your shirt, or you can actually let the bar deload into your chest like you normally would for a competition bench, and then pause there and have to press up out of that. There are various reasons why all three of those would be correct. So some people, for example, pausing 2 inches off the chest, it forces them to stop. And that's where, typically, maybe they come down, the bar touches them, they go to press, but the bar stops at 2 inches off their chest. That's kind of where their dead spot is. So it's not really mid-range, it's not just on the chest, it's just off the chest. What that usually means is that they had pretty good position, they got a stretch reflex to drive the bar up off the chest, but they're just weak, they're physically weak in that location. So they would want to pause 2 inches off the chest. Now, if you have somebody who tends to, as they lower the bar down, the bar kind of drops the last 2 inches really fast, it hits them and they lose positioning, you would want them to pause on the shirt. So they'll come through that full range of motion at the same constant speed, pause the bar just as it's touching their shirt, and then they have to generate force up out of there. Because later, when you allow them to use their body, when you allow them to deload the bar into their chest, and then also use leg drive and positional drive, then all of a sudden they're going to be strong as hell, because they'll now have control of the bar, plus all those power, okay, attributes. So, where you pause the bench relates to exactly where you're weak and what you're weak at, whether it's positional weakness, whether it's control weakness, whether it's actual just physical, like, drive. Physical contraction weakness. So positional pauses and pausing in a bench press helps a ton. You can also do what's called overstretch benching, which would be benching with an arched bar, like a bow bar or a duffalo bar. There are also those camber bars that have like that bend in the middle. And what it does, it allows you to extend deeper. So if you had a regular bar, the bar would have hit your chest. But with these bent bars, you can go lower than that and get an overstretch on your chest. That allows you to get kind of like an overstretch in those tissues and help develop physical strength through a fuller range of motion. So then when you go to a regular bar and the bar hits you quicker than what you expected, it almost feels like the bench press is shortened, and that's going to give you more explosive power. Now, that is a dangerous one to do if you do not have good, healthy shoulders, because probably a regular bench press already extends and stretches your shoulders as much as you would want, and that would be safe. So you can really only do overstretch presses if you have very healthy shoulders. Okay, so if you have no shoulder problems, go ahead and give them a try. If you have shoulder problems, I'd probably stay away from that. Okay, so we also have banded variations will sometimes help with off the bottom. Now, sometimes people are surprised at that being true. They think of banded stuff being helpful at only the top. But if you reverse band a bench press, okay, where the bands are coming from the top, they're going to deload the weight as the bar lowers down to your chest. And you're going to say to yourself, "Is why the hell would I want the weight lighter at my chest if I'm trying to build my chest strength?" Well, you don't make it lighter. So what you do is you add weight to the bar, so that way when it's at your chest, you're at damn near maximal ability for whatever your reps want to be. So if I'm going for a set of five, I'd be damn near right at a five rep max. But then as I press up, I get into heavier and heavier weights as the band deload, and that forces me to drive even harder and harder and harder and harder through the entire range of motion. And what that teaches people is how to explode off the chest. So they can't be weak off the chest and then gain speed and gain power throughout the press. They have to get that speed and power right off the press, right off the chest. So reverse band benching with heavy weight, not reverse band benching with an underload, okay? So reverse band benching with a heavy weight allows you to sometimes build explosiveness off the chest. Now, let's think of mid-range. Say you have trouble benching out of the, like you can get to the bar to the bottom, you drive it up off your chest, and then about like 3 to 4, maybe even 5 inches, depending on how long your arms are, somewhere around the middle of the range, the bar just kind of stalls out. Again, you have to look at positioning. You might have bent wrists, and that's not allowing you to express your power through the barbell. You might have your elbows over-flared or over-tucked. You might have your, that would be related to like your upper arm angle. Okay, so you can look at that. You may have also lost your arch. So maybe you squeeze your back. As soon as you went to press, you flared open your shoulder blades. Well, that undoes your base of the press, your strength, and you're screwed from there, and you're more likely to tear your pec, by the way. So it's really important to make sure that you maintain your arch and your mid-back squeeze throughout the pressing motion, not just on the way down. Okay? So there's all those positional concerns. That's why you have to look at technique. Now, some of my favorite ones for building mid-range strength is going to just be pausing in the mid-range. Okay, so I just want to come down, I want to stop halfway through the press. I can then continue down to the chest, press back up, pause again in the middle, and then press back through. We talked about that with squats, is you can do positional pauses on both the eccentric and contraction. Now, eventually the contraction pause is going to really limit how much you can lift. So once you get a pattern of that, you learn how to control your positioning, you can then get rid of the concentric pause. So you would come down on the eccentric, pause where you think your weakness is, come down the rest of the way, and drive up through that spot. Okay? Now, another thing that really helps in mid-range that most people don't pay attention to, and it's kind of hard to set up, is isometric presses. So where you set the hard supports, actually it's your mid-range, and you would want to press the bar up into the hard supports and then try to press so damn hard you're trying to break the hard supports. So you can do isometric presses like that, and they're freaking fantastic. So Josh Bryant, who is an elite level strength coach, really awesome dude, tons of good information. You can find him on YouTube. So Josh Bryant, B-R-Y-A-N-T. He has insane knowledge on bench pressing. So I think he was the youngest person ever to bench press 600 pounds in a competition. He probably has coached the most people to bench 600 pounds. So he also is like ridiculously good at deadlifts and squats, by the way, with knowledge and performance. So he has an 800-pound deadlift with like super-duper like T-Rex arms, which is probably really would be very, very, very impressive. So tons of good information. And he talks a lot about isometric presses. So you can look him up for more of that. So, positional pauses, isometric presses are great. And then I'm about to give two answers that are not a barbell bench. But screw it, they're good answers, so I want you to know them. Okay, is dumbbell floor flies. So if you lay on the floor, and you could do dumbbell flies. So search YouTube, okay, on YouTube search floor flies Josh Bryant. What that does is it's really awesome for developing your chest, and kind of it relates to kind of the mid-range of the press, and it's an awesome way to build strength in that spot. You can also do weighted dips where you pause at the upper arm being parallel to the floor. Okay, so you would lower yourself down, not to a full overstretch of your chest. You want to pause when your upper arm is at parallel, and then drive up out of that with focusing on a chest flex, not just a tricep extension, okay? You need to focus on your chest flexing as you're pressing through that. So those are two that I know they're not a barbell movement, but they're super-duper freaking awesome, so I wanted you to know about them, okay? So most often, When people miss at mid-range, it's a lot of positional problems, so make sure your technique is good. And then, like we said, you can do positional pauses, you can do isometric presses, you can do those dumbbell door floor flies, and you can do weighted dips. Okay. The next thing we have is weakness at lockout. Again, you have to look at position. So you might have driven up to the top, but you lost all of your arch, you lost your leg drive. Maybe your wrists have bent by then, your elbow placement is out of place, so you're over-tucked, over-flared, so you need to look at all that. You can use bands and chains. Again, they help overload the top of the motion. Therefore, you can help spend more time under tension and more stress in that area. You can use a slingshot by Mark Bell, howmuchyoubench.net. That slingshot is freaking awesome because it helps you off the chest, but it doesn't help you at all on the lockout, which is pretty much what bands and chains do, is they emphasize the lockout. People sometimes like board presses, and they'll do board presses for that mid-range or the lockout. I don't think they're very good. I don't like them. So because what you'll end up doing is you come down, you dump the weight into the board, and then you try to press up out of that, which does not mimic the full range of motion of a movement. So just like we talked about before in the podcast, you want to find variations that allow you to use full range if you can, because that way you maintain technique proficiency and or improve technique as you're building physical strength, okay? So, the person who sent the question also asked about, what about a touch-and-go bench where you just kind of like just drop it down, bounce off your chest, and just drive? Is that a good way to do an overload where maybe you can use a little heavier range of motion? No. Do the bands, do the chains, do the slingshot, because with those you get the overload, but you can still maintain good form. So you don't want to do a touch-and-go bench where your form goes to shit just to try to get an extra little bit of weight out of it, because what do you think you're going to do when you translate to your one rep max? So if your body learned, hey, doing shit technique and just bouncing the bar off me makes me stronger, oh crap, now I'm being tested by my strength, what do you think it's going to do? It's going to do the thing where you bounce the bar off your chest. So if you're missing press commands or you're not waiting for a press command because your body's freaking out and just wants to bounce the bar off you, practicing that in your training is not good. So you want to get rid of touch-and-go benching. So use bands, chains, or slingshots to do your overload, okay? So that is all the bench press information. Again, that's a lot of information, but I wanted to kind of give that section. And if you want more information just on bench pressing, again, send us an email, brutalirongym@gmail.com, and we'll spend a full like 30-minute podcast on just bench pressing. But again, that's good basics, good information to get started at. Okay? So what we're going to do now is we're going to go into conventional and sumo deadlifts. I'm going to try to like cover them all in kind of one go. So again, for you listeners on the podcast, give me 1 second as I transition our YouTube video. So hello, YouTube listeners. So this was the bench section. So this would be like kind of part two. So make sure you check out part one, which is the whole background information of what we're doing in this podcast. And then it talks about squats. So this part is just bench press, but make sure you listen to the first part two. Okay? Cool. So now we're going to stop your video and we're going to come back for part three with the deadlifts. Cool. Okay, thank you, podcasters. So let me get this next video started for them. Okay, welcome back. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about deadlifts. We're going to start with conventional deadlift. So if you're weak off the floor of a conventional deadlift, again, you have to look at technique and position. Your positioning can be horrible. So overwhelmingly, what I see happening sometimes is people doing conventional deadlifts, they have their head lifted up as if they're trying to snap their neck, and that's absolutely ridiculously horribly in a bad, bad, bad position for conventional deadlifting. Okay, what happens is when you lift your head up and your chin is up and out in front of you, it's pulling your whole body forward out of position. It's elongating your hip-to-head ratio, which is just going to make the deadlift even freaking worse. And then also what it does, it promotes a pulling mindset rather than a pushing mindset. So you want to, in a conventional deadlift, push the bar off the floor, not pull the bar off the floor. So if you start a deadlift and the first thing that moves is your head lifting up, you have the wrong mindset. You're doing the wrong thing. You need to drive through the floor, push the bar off the ground. Do not rip your head and your shoulders and upper back leading the way. So you don't want to pull a deadlift off the floor. You want to push a deadlift off the floor. If you bring your head down and make your head in line with your spine, or even look down even more than that, okay, where you're looking almost directly down at the floor, that is absolutely overwhelmingly going to put you in a better position, insanely better position. You'll get rid of back pain. and you'll be way, way stronger off the floor, and you'll have better position in the middle of your deadlift. Okay? So sometimes people have their head up, they'll get the bar off the ground, but then they kick right into almost like a stiff leg deadlift position because their head's all freaking up and pulling them out of position. So get your damn head down, okay, and get your head in line with your spine, and think of pushing the bar off the floor, not pulling the bar off the floor. Okay? The other thing you have to do is don't shove your stomach forward. So too often when people lift their head up, they also just push their belly forward and they overarch their back, like their lower back. And it's just a horrible, horrible position for strength. And you're going to really expose your lower back for pain. So don't do that, okay? So you need to breathe a big breath in and then brace your stomach as if somebody's about to punch you. You just want to brace in a straight up and down position. You do not want to push your stomach forward. Not at all, okay? You just want to brace. Just big breath and then hold where you're at. Don't overarch, don't underarch, just hold right where you're at as if someone's about to punch you, okay? So, positional-wise, that's important. The other thing is making sure that your elbows are right beside your knees. So your knees and elbows on a conventional deadlift should pretty much be right beside each other. If your knees are way behind your elbows, you're in a bad position. If your knees are in front of your elbows, you're in a bad position, okay? So overwhelmingly, your elbows should be kind of in line with your knees. Your head should be in line with your spine, and your belly and everything should be braced properly, not overarched, not underarched, just straight in line. Okay? Do all that, and you're going to be way the hell better off the floor, a lot less back pain. Okay? Now, what are the exercises that help us off the floor? Deficit pulls. I don't like doing deficits too large that it changes your technique or your range, like the way you would really deadlift. So sometimes even just a 1-inch elevation is plenty enough where you're elevating yourself. Okay, a deficit deadlift is where you pull with yourself elevated. An elevated deadlift is when you elevate the deadlift, you elevate the bar. So the deficit deadlift, it helps with leg drive because it's going to extend the part of the range of motion that has to do with your legs. So a 1-inch or a 2-inch elevation are usually plenty enough for you to be at a deficit. Deficits more than that really change the motion, and they really don't relate well to retesting a 1-rep max. So only a 1-inch or a 2-inch elevation of yourself is plenty. You can do dead stop reps rather than touch and go. So Chris Duffin, for example, if you don't know who that is, search him. He does sumo deadlifts, and he has a shit ton of videos where he's doing like 675 pounds for 20 reps. And what you'll notice is the bar bends so damn much that when he quote-unquote touches the floor, it's the outside, very outside edge of the plate touches the floor, but nothing in the middle of the bar, none of the other plates actually touch the floor. So he's really just doing a mid-range deadlift. He's not actually doing like 20 reps of a deadlift. He's moving a deadlift bar 20 times through the middle of the range of motion, but he's not doing 20 reps of a deadlift. So Chris Duffin will never listen to this podcast because he's kind of bigger than me, so I don't have to worry about him getting mad at me. but it's just the truth is if every rep doesn't look like the first rep, then every rep doesn't count like the first rep. Does that make sense? So if you do a dead stop where the bar hits the ground, you can maintain tightness. You don't have to let go of your positioning, okay? So maintain tightness, but let the bar fully settle. And then, pow, drive, explode the bar off the ground, just like you would have had to do off the first rep. If you do touch-and-go reps, that's more about time and attention than it is positional and power improvement. You're just trying to spend a lot of time and attention, so you're just trying to build muscle. Touch-and-go reps are good for building muscle. They are not good for building developmental, like, power strength, so the starting strength of a deadlift. Touch-and-go reps are not good for that. You want to do dead-stop reps, okay? You can also do speed singles. And what that is where you would actually, in between every single rep, you stand back up, rebreathe, rebrace, reset up, go again. Stand back up, rebreathe, rebrace, you know, set up, go again. So we might do like 10 singles with only 30 seconds rest in between. That is freaking fantastic for building power off the floor because they're freaking miserable, but all of them look like the first rep. So if I want to get good at the first rep of a deadlift, I have to do things that look like the first rep of the deadlift. Does that make sense? So you can't do touch and go where it's bullshit, like outside edge of the plate is touching, but it's not a real rep. And you can't do kind of touch and go where you're bouncing the bar off the ground and not getting a good dead start right from the floor. Okay? So you have to look at that stuff. Now, what if you're weak in the middle of the deadlift? Often that's positioning. So as you exploded off the floor, you lost lat tightness, you lost abdominal bracing. So those are the first two things to look at. And then also you might just have weak hamstrings. So a really good sign of weak hamstrings is as you drive the bar off the floor, your positioning stayed pretty good, but you started violently shaking as the bar passed your knees. That's weak hamstrings. Okay? So you can do anything that makes your hamstrings stronger, but if we look at main lift variations, one of my favorite things to do is mid-range of motion deadlifts, where I'll actually start the deadlift from the floor or a small one-inch deficit, and I won't touch the ground in between every rep. So I'll do the first rep to the top, I'll lower down to about like an inch off the ground, where the weights never touch, they stay an inch off the ground, and then you come right back up. And you do that for sets of like, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12. So where you get a lot of time under tension. That's going to help you build your positional strength. Also, you can do barbell bent over rows. Those are amazing for building conventional deadlift strength in the middle of the range of motion, okay, where the bar is right around your knees. So bent over barbell rows are fantastic for that because you extend the time under tension in that position, okay? They also are great because they help develop grip and they help develop upper back tightness and abdominal bracing awareness. So bent over barbell rows are one of my favorite things ever for conventional deadlifts. What about rack pulls, elevated pulls? No, they're bullshit. So you're just going to get to some crappy starting position that doesn't mimic the real position just because you can lift a bunch of weight. Okay, so they're not really good. So don't do those. So barbell bent over rows and mid-range touch and go are better. And then also just paying attention to lat tightness, abdominal bracing, and getting hamstrings stronger through like inverse curls, lying leg curls, stiff leg deadlifts, stuff like that. Okay. Now, what if you're weak at lockout? Again, positional. So you may have, as you lift it off the floor, if you did a pull rather than a push mindset, at the top you're going to be trying to contract your lower back, but you're not thinking about driving your glutes forward towards the bar. So you need to be flexing your butt cheeks and driving your pelvis towards the bar rather than trying to extend through your lower back. So that is horrible, horrible, horrible form. It's going to hurt your lower back, and you might never lock anything out. And if you do lock out, you might be likely to extend and bend your knees because you were so worried about flexing your lower back, you let your knees release. So then you get what's a soft lockout, and you don't get your lift to count at a powerlifting meet. So you have to make sure your positioning is correct. You want to be driving your butt towards the bar because you've pressed the bar off the floor, not trying to over-squeeze your low back because you tried to pull the bar off the floor. Okay? So a good deadlift, conventional deadlift, is a push off the floor, not a pull off the floor. Now, exercises you can do is pull against bands and chains. So you can do deadlifts against bands and chains. That'll help you develop strength at the top position. It'll also help expose any weaknesses you have at the top position. And then just glute development. Anything that builds your glutes, they'll help as well. Okay? You just have to be aware enough to actually use them. So that's why technique is important. Now, that is conventional deadlifts. What about sumo deadlifts? They're a little bit different. So they do them in different positions. You do them with different percentages of muscles. So there are differences in what you would think of. So weakness off the floor in a sumo deadlift is position. You have to pay attention to driving your knees outward towards the plates. Your shins should be pretty much straight up and down or ever so slightly forward tilt, where the kneecap is maybe directly above the bar, but the knees shouldn't be in front of the bar in your starting position. Okay, so you want to drive the knees outward towards the plates, and you want to think of having your lats super duper crazy tight pressed into your body, but still arching your chest up a little bit. So you want to put the pressure into your butt cheeks, hamstrings, and quads. So that's where you should feel the stress of the start of a sumo deadlift. So yeah, again, you have to make sure that your knees are not over in front of the bar. They can be slightly on top of the bar, but should be definitely back. Your knees should be about in line with your elbows, and you want to drive your knees outward towards the plates as you drive off the floor. Now, small deficit pulls are great. So again, you can elevate yourself by 1 inch, and that'll help you expose that positioning even more. You can do small deficits with a pause off the floor. So where actually you drive the bar up 1 inch, you stop, and then have to try to keep going. Those are horrible, but they're great for building positional strength, which will translate to more power off the floor. I have one guy I work with who weighs 100, he competes at 148 pounds, and he has over 600 pound deadlift, and we do this stuff, and it's freaking awesome for building his strength. So it's absolutely great for like overall development. You can also do sumo stance box squats to parallel. So sounds funny that you can do a squat to build your deadlift, but it's absolutely true. So if you do sumo stance box squats to parallel, That'll help your starting strength in a sumo deadlift. Now, what about being weak at mid-range? So weakness at mid-range, again, is positions. So your knees probably caved in. Your chest might have fallen down. You didn't maintain a good, strong postural arch. Well, in terms of like not arching in terms of having your belly shoved forward, but just good positioning in your upper body. So you might have gotten pulled forward and rounded forward. Okay? And again, you might be thinking of trying to lock out through your lower back rather than trying to drive your hips and glutes towards the bar. So with a sumo deadlift, you want to drive the bar off the floor with your legs. You then want to flex your butt cheeks and come towards the barbell. You do not want to pull the bar up with your lower back. You'll absolutely be weak as hell. You might never even get the lift off the ground. And if you do get the lift off the ground, you'll definitely miss the lockout. So you want to, again, think of pushing the bar off the floor, not pulling the bar off the floor with your lower back. And one of the things I love for that mid-range is mid-range partials. So you want to deadlift the first rep off the floor, do a whole bunch of reps where you keep lower the bar down to about 1 inch off the floor, and then you still lock out like normal, but you never let the bar actually touch the floor again after that first rep. You can do that regular off the floor, you can do it at a small deficit, 1 inch deficit. Okay? So that stuff is super helpful. Now, weak at lockout, almost always that's just mistiming. Like if you lost balance, it's mistiming your glute flex to your quad flex. So you have to make sure you drive with the legs as much as you can and then drive the butt forward to make sure you time that stuff correctly. And then also, obviously, just not paying attention to driving your butt forward is going to make you miss the lockout as well. So really just deadlifting against bands and chains would be the most helpful. And I'm a bigger fan of bands ever than I am chains. So I think you should use bands first and foremost and most of the time compared to chains on all three lifts, squat, bench, and deadlift. Okay? Okay, so that was conventional deadlift and sumo deadlift. Let me see what time we're at. Okay, we're at an okay time on the YouTube video, so we're just going to let them carry into the last part here. So in general, when you're wanting to get stronger at these three main lifts, you want to spend more time in the range of motion that you're weakest at. You also want to select exercise variations that emphasize your weakest area. So, for example, if I have weak triceps, I would do a close grip bench press. That would help build my strength in my triceps. Okay, so you just pick things that emphasize what you're weakest at. You get stronger at that thing, and you'll get better at the bigger thing. Okay? Now, in the person who sent the question for this podcast, one of the things they mentioned was strength comes down to having physical strength, but also having speed, how fast you can move the bar. If you can move the bar faster, you will be able to move more weight. So eventually you'll like put more weight on, then you'll get slow again. But that's the way it goes. So speed development is all of the lifts you can do banded from the bottom. That helps develop speed because you have to overcome the adding of the weight towards the top of the motion. So banded from the bottom will help speed development. Also, compensatory acceleration training, CAT training. So compensatory acceleration training. Again, Josh Bryant, search compensatory acceleration training, Josh Bryant on YouTube, and he'll explain what that is. But it's basically just having the mindset of moving the bar insanely violently. So you want to move the bar aggressive and fast, but never at the expenditure of technique. Okay? Technique has to be perfect, and then you move as fast as you can from there. So those are going to be the two biggest things. Is lifting against chains and bands, but again, bands are better. And then doing compensatory acceleration, just trying to move fast. So that'll help a lot as well. You have explosive movements where you can do like box jumps. So box jumps can help build explosiveness and speed. You can do regular box jumps where you do what's called a contrast box jump, where maybe you'll do like a hex bar deadlift at like super duper freaking heavy weight. Like let's just say like 80 or 90%. So you'll do a single at 90% of a hex bar deadlift, and as the bar sets down, you would explode and jump up from there. So that's kind of different things. You can do different contrast style stuff with bands and dumbbells, but you can just search contrast box jumps, and hell, I don't even know if there's anything that could come up for that. So I'll have to do that on YouTube myself. But contrast box jumps are fantastic, amazing way to build explosivity out of your lower body. And then doing plyo push-ups, like clapping push-ups, push-ups into bands, are really good for bench pressing. And you can also do contrast work. So where you might do like a couple banded, like you might throw on, say, 50% of your bench press and then throw on some bands that make that feel roughly about 70%. And then try to do a set of three really fast, aggressive, into the bands. And then go over and do a normal type of bench press, relatively heavy. So you can do contrast work like that, where you do speed work into bands or chains or just regular bar like cat work, compensatory acceleration training. You can do speed work and like that into heavy singles, and that'll help build contrast, and that builds explosivity as well. Okay? Woo! So those are these listening to the podcast. That was about an hour of information, and I wanted to kind of throw it all together because that way it's one resource that you can look into. Now, if you want any of this broken down into a single podcast, okay, let me know. Otherwise, I don't really want to take the time to do it if no one's going to need it. So shoot us an email, brutalirongym@gmail.com, and we'll make an individual podcast about any of the individual lifts. So this was hopefully super-duper helpful. Maybe you can look back through this, listen back through sections and parts of it to kind of re-understand what's going on. But like we said at the very beginning, the three ways you can get stronger is physical strength, technical strength, and mental strength. The first thing you want to look at is technical strength. You want to get better technique. You have to have somebody help that. If you could lift with technique better by yourself, you'd already be doing it. So get someone to help you. Do not get the strongest person you know. Okay? Now, you want to look for somebody who has worked with multiple types of people, multiple builds. If that happens to be the strongest person, great. It's most likely unlikely, but that's the case. So you want to get with somebody who has worked with people of different body types. Just because the person who's strongest, they tend to most often teach just the way that they do it to you. You might be built differently. Okay, so you need to find somebody who knows how to manipulate the movements for your specific body type, not just make you lift it their way. Okay, you're going to get injured doing that. You're going to get overtrained, you're going to get injured, and you're not going to stay very long in the sport. Cool. Okay, so hopefully that was helpful. I really do hope it was helpful. But if you have any specific questions about this stuff, then you want to know any more about any specific details, please, please, please reach out to us, okay? So thank you for listening if you actually did listen to this whole thing. And I hope it's beneficial. If there is anything you need to make sure this was beneficial, let us know. I don't want you leaving this podcast without knowing what you wanted to know, what you feel like you needed to know. Okay? So let us know, and we'll help you out. So if you like the information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, please share it with family and friends. So the more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we would love, love, love to hear from you. So this podcast is for you. So we want to know what you want to learn about. Okay? You can reach us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful. And thank you for listening.